Hey, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to this week's message. My name's Aaron, and I'm on the staff team here at Eastlake. Everything we do around here depends on the generous donations of our local and online community, people just like you, who tune into these messages and see great benefit from living that idea that life is a gift and love is the point. So if you love what Eastlake is up to, we'd encourage you to contribute by going to eastlakecc.com. With that, let's jump into this week's message.
Today, we're continuing our Deep Belonging series with my friend Kyle Reynolds. I want to invite him up. Why don't you guys do a great job of welcoming him?
Hi, everyone. It's good to see you guys. My wife gave me this shirt as a present. It was Just Because, and which are the best kind of presents, right? The Just Because presents wasn't Christmas or my birthday, and so this shirt shows up, Amazon brings it, and she's like, it's for you. And so I'm opening it up, and side note, I really like, I really love t-shirts that have really obscure references to movies or TV shows. It's my thing. And so I'm opening it up, and I'm like, she's like, she's like waiting. I'm like, is this from the movie John Wick? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, and I started crying. And I'm like, you know me. We belong together. Because it's a really good movie. And it's when Keanu's at his best, when he doesn't talk a lot, like The Matrix. Like, the less words, just do some karate moves. But that's what the series is kind of about, speaking of segues. And it's this idea of belonging, right? That we all want to belong and have a sense of belonging in our lives. We want to feel known by people. I really, really believe that most of my experience within church was focused primarily on knowing things, and what I really wanted was to feel known. And I think this sense of belonging comes primarily from a position of weakness in our lives. It's not our strengths and our successes. It's not how impressive we can be. It's in our weaknesses and our position of weakness that we really gain a sense of belonging. Let me share a goofy illustration for this because I couldn't think of anything better. I used to play a lot of cards, like a lot of poker, and I read a lot of books on the psychology of it and stuff. It'll hopefully get better. So I read like Carol's Book of Tells is like my favorite. Anyways. The overall psychology of someone like you're playing poker against and they raise and you're debating on whether or not you should call their raise, they're bluffing or not, is this idea that strong means weak and weak means strong. So, you know, example, if someone goes to bet and they like slam the chips in the middle and they lean forward in their seat and they're staring at you and they look very threatening, very confrontational, you know, very aggressive, that's a sign of strength, and that means probably their hand is really weak. Conversely, the same thing is true, that if you see someone raise, but this time they kind of like push their chips to the middle of the pot, and it's almost like those chips are like so heavy they can barely like, you know, they sigh even. I've seen them where the sigh is like a admitting defeat almost. And they lean back in their chair, they're not confrontational, they're not threatened. They're very patient for you to make a bad decision. These are all signs of weakness, meaning that they probably are holding they're holding a monster. You should probably fold. And the Bible actually has something really similar in it. In 2 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, it says, when I am weak, then I am strong. And I have seen that one of the paramount themes throughout all of the Bible is this central question of what will you do with your strength or your power? And yet, one of the critical themes throughout all of history is the more power religious people have had, the less sense of belonging they have created. And I have noticed in my reading of the Bible that Jesus redefined power and strength because he understood belonging and what it means to be human, what it means to belong. That weakness that we if we live our lives and we approach our spirituality from a position of weakness, that that actually helps us to belong. Let me explain a little bit better. Weakness, I think, helps us first ask better questions of the world and of others. There's this scene in the Bible in the last chapter of the book of John where Jesus, as the story goes, has died and he is raised from the grave. And in the midst of all that drama, his best friend Peter kind of sells him out. Like these people are like, hey, do you know that guy that's getting arrested? And Jesus like, or Peter's like, I don't know who you're talking about. I've never seen this guy. Just kind of just really sells him out. And so they kind of reconvene after all the drama and they're going on this walk on a beach. And Jesus asks Peter this question. He goes, do you love me? Which is such a position of weakness. Like I am so much more inclined to take a position of strength in those moments. You know, like I'd ask a question like, are you going to do it again? What are you going to do differently that's going to help me trust you in the future? Would you be willing to join an accountability group? Like, you know, like I take these positions of strength and Jesus doesn't, you know, like he asks a very vulnerable question because Peter could have just said, no. No, I don't love you. I never did. This isn't working out. And he opens himself up really vulnerably in that question because he knows that there's no intimacy without first vulnerability. And if for there to be really truly reconciliation between the two of them, at least one person is going to have to take a position of weakness. So similarly, a few years ago, I lost my job. And meanwhile, it's like same month, my wife got promoted. And just created all this stuff in our home. And I was feeling really weak, right? So I got to take on a position of strength. And I started asking all these questions, like from that position, you know, like, how come you don't appreciate that I did the dishes? Or did you even notice that I packed the kids' lunches all week long? Just all this peripheral stuff that is out there, it's safe if it's out there, you know, it's not. And it keeps me looking strong. And this is the worst part, is I started scorekeeping, where I would internally write down everything I did good for her, and then I would mark down all the things that she didn't do right for me. But the sick part is I get to choose what goes on that score sheet, so that when we would get into an argument, like I'm ready, all right? Like I have all this artillery, and she would lose every time. And it was really, really manipulative, actually. And it eventually got us arguing a ton, and we landed in counseling. And we're arguing in counseling, and I'm telling the counselor all the things that she doesn't appreciate about me. And then the counselor says, she says to me, do you think she needs you? And I didn't want to answer that. So I got really defensive, right? Like I was like, I don't know. And I started launching back into the dishes and stuff. And then the counselor says, why don't you ask her? And I was just like, don't make me do that. So I turned to Laura and I said, I'm scared that you don't need me, and when you figure that out, you're going to leave. And it just felt like this rock, you know, just dropped in the middle of the room. Just sitting in the rubble of our relationship. And she goes, you're right, I don't need you, because she's like fiercely independent. And she says, but I want you in my life. So can we figure this out, what this looks like? And that opened up like a whole better list of questions, you know, and ideas, where we both were able to come at this thing from a position of weakness finally and talk through. And then we started to imagine what this relationship could become, what it looked like moving forward. We've been married for almost 15 years, and I think the moments where we have been in the darkest seasons of our relationship have been the ones when we've lost our imagination. Like we started to believe it will always be this way. And we started to imagine something maybe better. And that's the second thing I've noticed about weakness. When we come from a position of weakness, is it actually produces imagination in our lives. We're a part of a small group. Brian McLaren was here a few months ago, and we went through that great spiritual migration book, which is awesome. It's great. And so we spent 6 weeks together as some couples and had a lot of wine. And we would, it was great. And we would sit around, and the first few weeks I noticed we all just kind of shared stories, horror stories of how we'd just been hurt by religion and religious people and expressing our questions and doubts of like, I don't even know if I buy any of this stuff anymore. But I noticed around like week 4 or 5, things started to turn because we just kind of had this real heightened sense of belonging. Like, yeah, we're all just kind of sitting in the rubble of it. And then we started to imagine, though, around week 5 of like, what could faith look like? What could even like a idea of church be? And it started to be beautiful. Like, it was just so like refreshing. And it was just great. Another example of this idea that how positions of weakness produce imagination. I took this class a few weeks ago. I got done with studying modern theologies and we studied James Cone, and he actually just passed away just a couple weeks ago. And he wrote this book called The Cross and the Lynching Tree. And in his book, he really pins down in the 1900s how white Christians would lynch a black man to a tree on Saturday and then worship Jesus who hung from a tree on Sunday. And James Cone just was like, really dives into like, why were they not able to connect the dots there, right? And he goes on to talk about how from this position of weakness, African Americans were able to imagine not something that happened, but something that is happening all around us. And through that, there was a sense of redemption that started to occur, and a strength too. And that's what I want, man. I don't, when I approach this thing from a position of strength, I just keep it to the safe distance of peripheral. I just think this Jesus suffered, and I ignore the suffering all around me in the world. You know, I was like, clap and thanks for, you know, being born naked on a cross. And I ignore the fact that there will be 1,000 girls on the street of Seattle tonight. I want to connect the dots. I want to allow this to be something that continually is happening around me. This re-crucified Christ. Got a little excited on that one. Last example is this story that Jesus tells, and he probably heard the saying, like, go the extra mile, right? And from a position of strength, I read that, and I immediately think of, like, this poster hanging up in some manager's cubicle right next to the cat poster that's like, hang in there. And he comes over, and he's like, hey, to the guy, you should really turn your TPS forms in on time and go the extra mile. Or poor Jenny down at the diner that's only got the minimum amount of flair, and her employer's like, you should really go the extra mile, Jenny. Obscure reference. And so, but I come from a position of strength, and the reality is like, man, it's so much better. It was like revolutionary. It was subversive, this instruction that Jesus is giving. Imagine that you are someone that's playing outside with your kids outside your home, and your town is occupied by the greatest military force of that day. And you are oppressed and marginalized and powerless. You were coming from an incredible position of weakness. And as this company of Roman guards comes through your town, one of the generals looks at you and says, hey, carry my pack. And so you have to lead your kids, and you're embarrassed and you're humiliated as you leave them on the side of the road, and you grab this general's pack and you're walking with them, and you have to walk with him a mile, he says, out of this town, and you pass the marketplace, and you catch eye of your neighbor, and you catch an eye of your wife picking out fruit, and you walk all the way out of town to the end of that mile. Then the general says, okay, kid, leave the pack, you're done. And at that moment, Jesus says, turn to him and say, if you don't mind, I'll walk this pack another mile. And the general agrees. and you put it back on, and you keep going, but now your back starts to straighten a bit, and your chin starts to rise, and there is some dignity that begins to be restored in you. From this position of weakness, you are discovering an incredible amount of strength. Jesus is daring them to walk through that position of strength so they can find a subversive kind of freedom. So that now when he walks back home, he has this sense of dignity he did not have if he would have stopped at the first mile. That's, I think, incredible. And I miss that because I come to the text from a position of strength. And I separate in the Bible in categories of like believer and non-believer, and I'm seeing so much more. It's about oppressed and oppressor, and it's incredible what he's inviting people into, to imagine a different way of living, a different path towards freedom and enlightenment. I've found that it's in our weakness that produces imagination. It's in the pig pen that we come to ourselves. It's at the rock bottom that we're able to imagine sobriety. It's in the I don't knows of life that new ideas are invited in. Now, that's why you see all the major world religions have very similar spiritual disciplines or practices. Things like fasting and simplicity, solitude, silence. These are all methods of subtracting rather than addition. And in that, they allow us to take on a position of weakness so that we can imagine something.
Well, hey, everyone. Excuse the interruption for a quick minute. My name is Kristen. I'm one of the team members here at Eastlake, and we're so glad that you're joining us today on the podcast. It's been so encouraging for us to hear stories from people all over the country and the world who are listening to these messages and resonating with this idea that we just keep saying over and over again, which is life is a gift and love is the point, and that we are all committed to being a beneficial presence in our own community. So thanks for joining us. I hope that that's resonating with you. It's just really fun for us. So wanted to also say thank you to those of you who contribute. This place, all of these things that we do are happening because of people who make consistent, even just small consistent gifts. It helps us plan. It helps us know that there are really people behind us who want this thing to continue. So thank you to those of you who do that. If you haven't had a chance to give yet, I would encourage you to maybe think about doing that if you find this beneficial in your own life. To make a contribution, it's really easy. You can go to eastlakecc.com, and there's a donate button there with all the info. So thanks so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the message.
I love that we do guided meditations here. I'm sure I'm not the only one that, like, as we've been taken through that guided meditation, we're able to be in our bodies and present that an idea or some kind of new imagination of like a thought about a relationship is sparked in your mind. That's really common. My favorite, though, is when I hear, "Hello, my name is Chad." It's like, he does this occasionally. He's magical. And it's like a voice of an angel. And I can just imagine him narrating like all the documentaries on Netflix. It's incredible. That's where I go. But steep turn there. That was really... we needed to laugh there. So it's not just a position of weakness, but it's furthermore, it's an embracing of our humanity. It's a understanding of our inner weakness that I think presents belonging to us, that allows us to feel known. Let me show you this painting that I think is just remarkable. It's by Caravaggio, and it's the scene of, again, after Jesus in the Bible is said to die and then be resurrected, that he goes and meets with Thomas, because earlier in the middle of that drama again, Thomas is like, "Hey, listen, I heard the rumors that this guy's raised from the grave, but I'm not buying it. Like, there's no way. Unless I see the marks in his finger, or his fingers, in his wrist and his side, I'm not gonna." And so Jesus makes a special way of he goes to him, which I think is really special. But that scene I really like, because you can see the hesitancy in Thomas. He's the one on the right. And he's, because I would too. I mean, that's an awkward, uncomfortable, I wouldn't want to put my fingers in someone's gaping wound, right? That's invasive. And yet Jesus, with these big, strong carpenter hands, is gently guiding Thomas's fingers towards that spot. I think that's incredible. It's like, he's like, let's go there. Let's go right to the center of your humanity, of your question, of your doubt, Like, let's go right there. I think it's remarkable how he interacts with Thomas in those moments. It's not just in our weak victories, but it's in our failures that we're able to have a sense of knowing, of belonging. I mean, it's in that moment that Thomas feels thoroughly convinced that he knows me. I am loved. I belong. Think about for a second when the last meaningful interaction you had with someone else, where you really felt like, oh, wow, we're closer now than we were before. It wasn't because they like shared with you some big success or victory in their life. It was because they were able to invite you into something that a weakness of their humanity, a struggle, an insecurity. That's through that you got a sense of belonging. That's how we ultimately connect. But I don't want to miss this this point of this picture, because it's not just Thomas's weakness that we're entering into in that scene. It's Jesus's weakness as well. And I'm convinced that Thomas belongs in his weakness because he's entering into Jesus's weakness. Bonhoeffer, in this quote, says it better than I will. He says, God consents to be pushed out of the world and onto the cross. God is weak and powerless in the world, and in precisely this way, and only so, is at our side and helps us. Matthew 8:17 makes it quite clear that Christ helps us not by virtue of his omnipotence, but rather by virtue of his weakness and suffering. As a Christian, I make Jesus into God far too quickly, and because it allows me to use him to gain a position of strength, so that I'm right and you're wrong, and I know something you don't know, and I skip over his humanity, and it strips me of mine. And I am, I'm not doing that anymore. It's interesting that Bonhoeffer wrote that quote in prison. And evangelical Christians love to quote Bonhoeffer, but they'll quote him out of this book called Life Together. Great book, but it's not Letters in Prison. And I've seen a similar trend in like Martin Luther King. You know, we love I Have a Dream, but we won't talk about what he wrote in prison. It addressed far more things like Vietnam and a whole lot more stuff going on there and complicity. And even the Apostle Paul. I found if you really want to know what someone thinks about God, find them at their position of weakness. Find them in their most humanness. So I want to wrap things up with a few thoughts, maybe a practice we can do together. So would you mind closing your eyes? I'll take you through a pseudo guided meditation to kind of wrap things up. Let's go ahead and take a deep breath. Choose to be in your body, to be in this present moment. What is your inner weakness? Where do you feel the most human? Perhaps it's the job loss. It's an addiction. It's an insecurity. An inadequacy, a fear of intimacy, perhaps it's grief, maybe it's doubt. Would you allow the universe or God to put his finger on it for just a moment? Now, in this moment, you belong. It belongs. It belongs in your story. Through it, we belong together. We can include it and then transcend. Take another deep breath, if you will. Go ahead and open your eyes. This is the kind of a belonging that I've experienced at Eastlake over these last 4 years. I haven't experienced anything like this. You know, all my experiences of church before this were about common agreement, and that's not the case here. But instead, it's beautiful. Well, like, I think what we have in common is we all need help. We enter into this place from a position of weakness, and some of the interactions I've had with all of you, it's been exactly that. You've refreshed me over and over again. I default to that position of strength so quickly, and you don't let me get away with it. But it goes further than that. It's not just about belonging here, because that would just be another form of tribal centricness. It allows us to move out into this world so that when we see another person's weakness, it's no longer a chance to be strong, but a chance to invite them into our shared humanity. It's not about winning or being right. It's not us or them, and it's certainly not us versus them. It's only we. And that spreads out to our neighbor. For me, it's certainly spread out to our houseless neighbor. Because as I learned from Brené Brown, when I walk by someone experiencing homelessness, I've discovered the reason I'm really uncomfortable oftentimes is because they understand vulnerability better than I do. And they start to uncover this position of weakness that I don't want to show. You know? They know how to ask for help, and I always struggle with that. No wonder Jesus says, "Blessed are the poor." They have something to offer if I would only receive it. And this position of strength religion that I used to default to, it's not good news, because it's not good news for the poor or the disabled or the marginalized or the oppressed or the powerless, for the reality of all humanity. True religion begins in our position of weakness. So with that in mind, would you care to stand with me, and I'll lead us in a benediction. May we belong in our weakness. May we lay down our positions of strength and open up to a pathway towards intimacy. May we imagine true belonging here and among all of humanity. May we cultivate a spirituality that seeks to unite us in humility and vulnerability. May we discover strength in our weakness. Amen.